The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of Valerie, her guests, and callers. Now here's your host, Valerie Kirkgaard.
I am your host. I am here, and you're listening to Waking Up in America, dynamic radio dialogues on issues that matter. We're actually in our 22nd year now. Want to ask a question while we're on the air? Send me an email at val@wakingupinamerica.com. That's val@wakingupinamerica.com. And to get things started off, let's remember what our forefathers gave us. They actually gave us a republic, okay? Not a democracy, a republic. And you might want to check and see what that difference is. So I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I'm Dr. Val Kirkgaard, and in 1984 I carried the Olympic torch. And in 1987 I actually took up the torch and took it onto radio with Social Concern Talk Radio. And the motto of the Olympic torch is always swifter, higher, and stronger, and I think that's a great motto to live by. And through Gail's connections and some of my own, we've had a lot of inspiration from Olympic champions here on Waking Up in America, and we've had people, really guests from all fields, from Dennis Kucinich to Senator Alan Cranston to John Denver to Willie Nelson, J.J. Virgin, Mary Louise Zeller, Taekwondo champ, Wayne Dyer, Larry Hagman. They've all been here, and they all have brought their own particular torches to Waking Up in America, and it's been a privilege. Most recently, last week, we had Tim Turner, who is one of the leaders in the New Republic and also an expert in maritime law. You can hear any of these shows. We go all the way back to 2005 in the archives at the website. So if you simply go over to wakingupinamerica.com and click on the archives, you can hear all the past shows that we've done. Now, if you hear a dog barking or a telephone ringing or an angel singing, know that we call in from our homes and offices all over the United States. Actually, sometimes we get foreign calls to create this program. So we're delighted today to have Harvey Wasserman with us. He's actually been on Waking Up in America a couple of years past. I'm going to just tell you what the wonderful people over at Wikipedia say about him. And Harvey, please feel free to put in any corrections if you wish. And also we have Gail Ellen here, our Arts and the Beauty Director. I love this show. I love the connections, and I love the mix. It says right here that Harvey Wasserman was born in 1945 and is an American journalist, author, democracy advocate, and advocate for renewable energy. He has been a strategist and organizer in anti-nuclear movement in the United States for over 30 years. He has been a featured speaker on Today, Nightline, National Public Radio, CNN, Lou Dobbs, and other major media outlets like Waking Up in America. Oh, that was my addition, Harvey. Wasserman is senior advisor to Greenpeace USA and the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. He's an investigative reporter and senior editor of Columbus Free Press, where his coverage with Bob Patricus, thank you so much, had prompted Jesse Jackson to call them the Woodward and Bernstein of the 2004 election. And I get regular mailings from him, and when I received his information on his response to Barack Obama winning the Nobel Peace Prize, I just couldn't resist inviting him to be on. I think his presence in all ways is extremely relevant. And Harvey, so was the bio fairly accurate?
Yeah, it gets there. I do teach at a couple colleges here in Central Ohio, and I'm continuing to write and speak against nuclear power and in favor of Solartopia, which is a vision of a green-powered Earth. And that's pretty much what I do. I have five daughters. That's not many.
Oh, my goodness. You've been busy.
Well, my wife has.
Well, you had a moment of it. You've got your hands full afterwards as well. What were you going to say, Gail?
I thought that was wonderful that he had five daughters, and I'm really...
It is great. I'd take another one, actually, anytime.
Aww.
I love having daughters. These daughters are great. I suppose they're daughters that would be difficult, but I have really fabulous kids, so I'm very lucky.
I actually was, Val, really anxious to hear what he had to say about what his response was and what he had written and said.
Well, let me just say, Harvey, that your article was entitled "The Nobel Screams Out of Afghanistan and Go Solartopia," and I wanted to know if you'd like to say more about that.
Well, I was actually taken aback because the first time I read something about the Nobel for Obama, I thought it was a joke, actually, but I'm very glad they gave it to him because I think that it will force him to rise to a higher standard. And, there's no hiding now, I think they gave it to him primarily. You got to remember, these are Europeans. I think they gave it to him primarily for not being George W. Bush. And frankly, I think he deserves it for not being George W. Bush. Just the accomplishment of a black man becoming president of the United States is huge. I mean, it puts him, really does put him in a different category. Now, what he's doing, what he's done, I hope, that this is a political calculation. I believe it, at least in part, a political calculation that will make it easier for him to get out of Afghanistan.
Well, you know,
it has to happen.
It was interesting because I was listening. Well, first of all, my reaction, and Gail, I'll ask you yours. My first reaction was why? Mostly because...
Well, then my reaction was why not?
Well, later it got to why not, but originally it got to why, because I was still hung up on the wars and such. And my
it is a hang up. Sorry to interrupt, but I think the why is that I'm sure somebody on that committee, the Nobel Committee is five people chosen by the Norwegian Parliament, and so I believe that somebody on that committee probably said, "Hey, look, the most important decision in the world is about to be made, which is, will the United States escalate in Afghanistan? And if this Nobel Prize helps him or forces him to not escalate, then it's worth every cent."
Well, I listened to the one of the men from Norway. He was actually being interviewed on KCRW here in Santa Monica, and he said that he was shocked when the committee had decided this, that there were 205 nominations and that the nominations actually were placed in February of this year and that they weren't decided, until September.
They were decided, I think, less than a week before the decision.
Right. Well, what he said was sometime in late September.
Right.
Anyway, I thought it was a pretty interesting conversation. He said that Barack Obama was not even on his particular radar, and he listed three other people whose names, unfortunately, I can't replicate, from South America and from Africa and such as that. And what he said was, and he referred back to another time, and he said only once before in Nobel history, to his understanding, had the Nobel been given for vision. And he felt that this prize had actually been given for a new vision for the world, and that Barack Obama was the possibility of that vision, and it wasn't seen anywhere else. And I thought that was a very interesting comment.
Right. Well, he has done a couple of important things. He's cut back on the crazy missile defense thing in Europe. That's important.
He did Guantanamo.
He hasn't done Guantanamo.
To some degree.
Yeah, he said he's going to do Guantanamo. But the important thing, I think, is that, from the European point of view, the change between George Bush and Barack Obama is, in fact, enormous. And just to start, and the accomplishment of getting himself elected as the first, non-white president, that's a big deal. And so in my piece, the Nobel screams out of Afghanistan and go to Solartopia. They also did include a discussion of global warming, and of course George Bush completely dismissed the idea of global warming. And so this is critical that we have a president who does have the vision, at least to acknowledge that global warming is real. And he's also, in a little more narrow framework, although the firing of Van Jones is not a good indicator, but has acknowledged...
You know, I'm ignorant about that. Could you tell me what that is?
All right, well, let me get to it in a minute. But he's acknowledged that saving the environment is also part and parcel of saving the economy. Now, this is a big deal because, you know, under Bush and these other guys, they've always said that you can either have a good economy or a good environment. And what Obama has done is said, hey, look, you know, saving the economy and saving the ecology are pretty much the same thing.
Well, what That's Bush had done thing. In the first year of his presidency was so horrifying to me, I was just breathless.
Well, you know, all 8 of the years, I mean, he was...
But the beginning, I mean, he just marched in and started wiping out forests. Just
oh, yeah.
First crack out of the barrel.
The entire period. So I think that this is critical stuff, and I think that part of the Nobel is a gamble. That it's going to be... He's always going to refer to now as that Nobel winner. And if ever whenever he does something militarily, it's going to be, hey, what are you doing? You got a Nobel Prize.
Al, I'm really resonating to Harvey's inside view here. And I wanted to read something that was in the Los Angeles Times letter to the editor. It said, 8 years of the prior administration set back American relations and respect in ways we still can't measure. Maybe this was given because the world was thrilled to have survived the Bush years. President Obama communicates at high and understandable levels and has done much to restore America's image. This honor illustrates how grateful the world is to see change we can believe in. By the way, I'm a lifetime registered Republican.
I know, I love it. I absolutely... Gail, I want to tell you something. Another news report I heard said that before Barack was elected, we stood seventh in the world as a respected nation, and now we're first. That's huge.
Well, let's hope we hold it, you know.
I think we will. I think the standard that the Nobel Prize gave was, you know, it was a huge surprise to me. I actually was at the Nobel Laureates Conference in Rome in 2005, and it was maybe, I carried the Olympic torch too, Harvey, and those things inspired me to levels that are just staggering. I think that the thing that really stuck in my craw was the more troops going to Afghanistan and such, and
yeah.
Seeing the pictures of the children damaged from war. One of the articles that I read actually had pictures of the children that had been injured, and it's pretty powerful stuff, you know?
Yes, it's very powerful, and I think that this... I wrote another piece about this, Obama's LBJ moment, which was posted at freepress.org. All my stuff is at freepress.org and solartopia.org. And, you know, this decision on whether or not to escalate the war in Afghanistan is the most important decision, I believe, that's being made in the United States since March of 1965, 44 years ago, when LBJ quietly did escalate the war in Vietnam, and we're all still paying for it, and we'll pay for it for the rest of our lives. And so now this is not many people were watching when LBJ made that decision. Now we are confronting this decision, and it's very transparent. It's out there, and people have to understand that we cannot do this. And I'm very heartened. Today the New York Times ran a piece, you know, kind of a puff piece on Joe Biden, saying basically, look, you know, here's the guy who's in the administration who's arguing not to escalate. Clearly, the Times doesn't want an escalation. And, you know, this is a decision that is going to be of enormous importance. And I hope that this Nobel will help prompt Obama to stand up to the generals. He should have fired Stanley McChrystal right off the bat, as far as I'm concerned, for, you know, insubordination. But whatever the case, we have got...
Could you tell our listeners more about that?
Well, Stanley McChrystal is the general running, I guess he's running a show in Afghanistan.
Right.
He has, you know, leaked his own personal memo saying we have to escalate and put in God knows how many more troops.
40,000.
Yeah, and it's just William Westmoreland all over again. I actually met William Westmoreland, the general who was responsible for our escalation in Vietnam. I debated him twice in the 1980s. He went to his grave believing that we won the war in Vietnam.
Get out. Where would he live?
Wow.
Well, yeah. I mean, I had this conversation with him. I wrote a piece about that, too, which is at freepress.org. And I had it. Actually, I was in an automobile with him for 2 hours from the Harrisburg Airport to Juniata College in Pennsylvania. And, you know, he just explained, look, you know, we bought time for those administrations in Thailand, Indonesia, and Singapore, which were horrible dictatorships, and that was his idea of a success. And so, you know, we're looking at another William Westmoreland moment there, and if the Nobel Prize really focuses a spotlight that helps Obama not escalate that war, then you know, it's a huge deal. Because if he escalates that war, his presidency is finished, and really this country has no future whatsoever, economically, spiritually, you name it, because that war in Afghanistan is a bottomless pit. There's nothing to be won there. There's no chance on earth that we will win anything there. We're going to, anybody, you know, the history of Afghanistan, the last foreigner to win in Afghanistan was Alexander the Great.
Well, you know, one of the reasons for that, I was listening to a report on that last night. They were saying that when they took troops into Baghdad, they actually were dealing with a quarter of the entire population. When they go to Afghanistan, it's so distributed that they would only be dealing with maybe a tenth of any group in one area. So the different militant groups are scattered all over the place. And I think that ties up with your conversation of the bottomless pit. The other thing that they were talking about, which I found really interesting and rather surprising, I was trying to figure out where these 40,000 troops were supposed to come from, and they were saying that the people had been on rotation and that they were going to go back. But here was the shocker for me. They also said that military enlistments were at an all-time high.
Well, yeah, because the economy's so bad.
You think that's it?
Oh, absolutely. There's no other reason. No military. It's strictly for economic reasons.
Oh.
I mean, I teach at college. A lot of these students are there because they've been in the military or they're going to be in the military. It's the only way kids can get through college now without huge student loans. So, enlistment's always up in a bad economic time.
I'm actually glad to hear that's the reason.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because when I was listening to it, I thought, my God, are we behind this thing?
No, I mean, the point is that the students really have nowhere to turn. You know, students are coming out of college with $50,000, $100,000 in student debt. I mean, it's an unsustainable situation. And so, yeah, that's why they go into the military. It's because of the GI Bill. And, you know, there's no jobs. So, but God forbid that we should go in and escape and escalate in Afghanistan. It'll be the end of this country. As if, you know, at least in Vietnam, we had the economic reserves to get out of there, you know, somewhat intact economically, even though it's hurt us terribly.
Good Lord, I didn't.
But, you know, to go there now when we're on the brink of bankruptcy is insane. And, you know, who else is in Afghanistan? You know, the
Russians,
country,
yeah.
Yeah, the last countries to be struck, if we're in there allegedly for to protect ourselves from terrorism, I mean, the last countries to have major terrorist attacks were Spain and England.
And they're not there.
Well, they're not there. Well, the Brits are a little bit there, but, you know, Spain got left a long time ago. So, you know, or in India, actually. And so, you know, India's not there. China's not there. China's in there. I read an interesting piece. China's in Afghanistan doing mining and making a lot of money, and we're basically protecting them and being of huge economic value to them.
Do you think that could have to do with our debt to them?
Yeah. You know, I mean, we're just being the suckers there. And so God forbid that Obama should escalate. And if this Nobel helps him not escalate them.
Let's just all pray. You know, you haven't mentioned Solartopia at all, which was an important part of the title of your article. And I think we should have some time for that. And then before we do, Gail, is there any comment you'd like to make or anything you'd like to say?
You know, I just wanted to ask Harvey what he might think the way to get out of there quickly and effectively and efficiently would be.
Well, what we should do is we should land airplanes there and put the troops on them and fly them home. That's what we should do. I mean, you know, anything else we do there is ridiculous. You know, I remember very clearly the day that the photos were printed of the last American guys jumping off the rooftop in Saigon. And that's exactly what's going to happen in Afghanistan. We're just not going to get our butts kicked. And, you know, they got to get out of there. There's nothing they can do there. It's Afghanistan. We're in bad enough shape here.
Yeah, it's like chasing gophers, you know?
Right. Something like that. So at any rate, that one I haven't heard before.
I know. It just came to me in an instant.
Oh, okay.
After having stepped in a gopher hole in my backyard yesterday, I thought I'd never see the little buggers. And I was thinking about the caves of Afghanistan.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and all the work we did supposedly chasing bin Laden around through the caves.
Right.
I thought,
well, there is absolutely nothing that we are going to accomplish of any value in Afghanistan.
If you stick your foot in a gopher hole, you break your ankle, too.
That's
the corollary.
Now, as for Solartopia, Solartopia is the vision of a green-powered Earth. It's an energy economy based entirely on renewables and efficiency. There are 8 basic green steps to Solartopia, which I can tell you in a minute. But essentially, Obama also, you know, we have a climate bill, and Obama has to take us entirely away help us get entirely away from nuclear power and from renewable energy. What needs to happen is a defense budget, which is, you know, larger than the defense budgets of all the other countries of the world combined, needs to be converted to get us 100% on increased efficiency. We waste 50% of the energy that we use or consume in this country. And that has to change. And I would take every cent of the defense budget and, you know, do LEDs and the insulation and reconstitute the mass transit system.
Well, wouldn't that require
them first?
Wouldn't that require putting the military into something like the WCC or something?
But I wouldn't mind doing that, you know, and just get you know, a program to put everybody to work in this country who needs a job, tightening up our energy economy and rebuilding mass transit. You know, the great ecological catastrophe of the 20th century was the conscious destruction of the mass transit system, which was conducted, and this is one of those conspiracy theories that we know is true. General Motors set out purposely to destroy the mass transit system, and they did it.
Did you ever see who killed the electric car?
Yes, and that's a very accurate portrayal. Well, that's a small piece of it. There's also a movie out there called The Great, or there's an article, I don't think it was ever made in a movie, though. I heard it might have been, called The Great Streetcar Conspiracy. And The Great Streetcar Conspiracy was revelation that investigative report on exactly how Standard Oil and General Motors and the glass and rubber companies conspired to kill the streetcar system.
Oh, I totally get it. I used to ride the streetcar from Beverly Hills to Hollywood to visit my aunt. My mom would drive me from Santa Monica. And by the way, we didn't worry about children being kidnapped or killed or anything like that then. You know, mom would drop me off on the streetcar. It cost a dime. I would ride the streetcar down. I could hop off at any point, and then they pulled them all out. They also took out the Angels Flight in downtown Los Angeles, and it took almost 30, 40 years to get it back up again. I mean, it's absurd.
Yeah, and, you know, actually, there is no movie called The Great Streetcar Conspiracy, but there is a movie that was made somewhat about it, which, if you could figure it out, was Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which is actually about wiping out Toontown to put in a clover leaf. but it shows people riding the red line, which, you know, was used to go all over L.A., as you know.
Oh, it was terrific. It was totally terrific. And then Eisner got a hold of the Disney backlot and destroyed history over there. I mean, it's just the amount of destruction that's been put in for corporate office buildings and corporate profit is just horrifying.
Yes, it's terrible. And so now we've got to change all that, and we got to rebuild our mass transit system.
And so how do you act? How are you actively involved in causing this right now?
Well, my Solartopia book talks about, you know, that's basically my form of communication. And the Solartopia lays out a strategy, an eight-step strategy for getting to a totally green-powered Earth. It's, I actually kind of based it on the Buddhist Four Noble Truths and eight whatevers to enlightenment. And so I had an article published on May 26th at freepress.org called The Eight Green Steps to Solartopia. And basically they are, we start off by banning waste and war. You know, nothing should be produced in this world that cannot be 100% recycled, and that includes, of course, all weapons. And we should stop making weapons. They're not, you know, and just get rid of war, which is possible to do, and people have talked about it, but that's the number one really thing that we need to do ultimately to save our ability to exist on this planet. Then we have to maximize efficiency and conservation, you know, convert the country to stop wasting the 50% of the energy that we consume, and to rebuild our mass transit system. It has to be done. We need to transcend fossil nuke, or what I call King Kong, which is coal, oil, nukes, and gas. And there's zero tolerance for any fossil fuels or nuclear power. And that's a big part, of course, of the climate and current energy debate is this so-called renaissance of nuclear power, which is really more like it's a relapse and, you know, completely nuts. And it can't happen. The only way they can build new nuclear plants is to have the taxpayers pay for them, and we can't allow that to happen.
That's one of the things.
Well, since the Nobel Prize did mention global warming, you know, we're not going to fight global warming by building nuclear plants. That's utterly insane.
Well, there's one thing I'd like you to address before we say goodbye, because I know you have to leave at the half hour, and Gail and I are going to have plenty to talk about.
I'm arranged. If you want, I can stay a little longer.
Oh, that would be absolutely wonderful.
Okay, great.
Okay, so then before the half hour, we're actually on the air with Harvey Wasserman and Gail Ellen, and one of the things that was really shocking to me, Harvey, was I've been hearing about children beating up and killing other children a lot, and the figures of kids that are armed and the age that children are dying and in the different cities and such. And I was wondering if any of your work included working with our youth as well.
Well, we're hoping that, you know, a saner Earth will certainly help our kids come back around. I haven't seen that kind of thing, but, you know.
They set a kid on fire yesterday.
Where?
Oh, God, maybe it was Florida. I don't remember. I was just horrified. This young man had disagreed with him and something about a stolen bicycle or something, and they came and they ignited him. A couple of days before that, I heard about children taking on this other young man and beating him to death in a Detroit suburb, I think. I mean, it's just I'm hearing more and more and more and more of this stuff. And it was, as I said, when I rode the streetcars, there was nothing to worry about.
Well, yeah, we got a lot more to worry about. The country has really gone downhill because of our wars and because of our bad ecological situation, and we don't have health care the way we should, and we don't have people taken care of. And I think it's a very high-stress,
so we actually,
you know, unhappy society at this point in time.
We actually have to take a break here for Diamond Alignment, and we're on the air with Harvey Wasserman, Gail Ellen, and we will be right back.
We live in a world that is more alive with possibility than ever before in history. Yet it is easy to get lost in the confusion and chaos of such an accelerated world. How do we stay connected and aligned with the unlimited potential that lies within us and soar in these exciting yet challenging times? Diamond Alignment, a sacred technology for the 21st century, offers high-speed connection and alignment with this divine power within, both convenient and profound. The 6-minute multi-sensory diamond experience delivers delivered via the internet clears your mind, relaxes your body, and creates inner peace no matter what is going on around you. The Diamond Alignment Experience effortlessly keeps you charged with joy and equanimity and greater focus and clarity throughout your day. When you experience the expansive energy of Diamond Alignment, you activate the unlimited wealth and potential within you.
Actually talking on the air, so that's pretty terrific too.
Okay.
Well, what you were listening to was Diamond Alignment. And Diamond Alignment is a very special process. If you go to our website and you skip down to the bottom of the webpage, you'll actually see the little Diamond Alignment insignia. And that Diamond Alignment insignia, when you click on it, you can actually hear that tone. And if you play it in the background when you're working, you will be amazed at how very relaxed. Your day will be much more relaxed. There's something about the transmission that's very relaxing. You can also go to the diamondalignment.com and find out about how to sign up for it on a monthly basis. I really admire Jacqueline Joy for putting this together, and I really appreciate what she's done there. Also on the website, there are some very interesting things that you should be checking out over there. Check out the numbers. And check out the video section. And you also might want to check out, his name is Nick. And if you ever get complaining about what your day is like, check out Nick. Because Nick, bless his heart, he's a happy man who just actually got married. I've been watching him for years. I actually stuck him on the front page today so you could hook up with him. And we put on there, nothing has to keep you down. Nick has no arms and legs. He's got an absolutely charming personality. I've actually been watching him for years. And he's funny. He's fun, and he's awesome, and he lives a very normal life, and he's got a great sense of humor. You can also see Handsome Harvey over there at solartopia.org. I like this. This is my favorite picture of you, Harvey. I don't know how old it is.
Which one is that? I got to get on you. What's your website?
It's wakingupinamerica.com. And you'll see the Nobel screams to Obama.
Okay, wakingupinamerica.com.
And if you go to the top of the page, Harvey, you'll see good old Nick. Oh, by the way, the two-hour free validation. This guy is from the Bones show, one of the actors. I can't think of his name right now.
Uh-huh.
And he validates people for 15 minutes. And it's really great to watch the transformation in people as he validates them. I love this thing.
Oh, okay.
Now, isn't that a good picture of you?
Now, where is it here? I'm looking at your website.
Okay, scan down.
I got to scan down.
Yeah, you have to move it down.
Oh, yeah, that was in... we had a press conference in Washington, D.C. in 2004 after George W. Bush stole the election.
Yeah, I know about that. I had Clint Curtis on.
And
you know
this was on the AP. This is an AP photo.
Oh, great. Do you know Clint Curtis?
Sure, very well.
Okay, I'm going to his wedding.
Oh, great.
In November. So you're going to go to his wedding?
No. get married in Florida?
You know, he hasn't said the location yet, but I love this guy, and I was so... He was the one that wrote the cricket program for Florida.
Right.
Okay, and then he even testified about Ohio. And, you know, like, it was something like Kerry won the exit polls, and Bush got 2,000 more votes than there were people in the arena.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Still, they didn't stop him. But I really want you to go down to running the numbers. Go down under the baby, the little pouty baby, and see running the numbers, an American self-portrait.
Well, let me get there. I just stole that picture of Obama walking his dog. I thought that's hilarious.
Isn't that good?
Uh-huh.
But go down and click on running the number.
Okay, so we're running the numbers.
Okay, now open that up. And you see Snoopy and Linus, right?
Yeah.
Now go down and watch it expand, because these things are actually made out of this happens to be made out of dog collars.
Oh, my God.
Now take a look at the packing peanuts. These are, you know, those things that are in...
Yeah, sure.
Okay,
yeah,
and then the oil barrels. That's one of my favorites. Look at the oil barrels go.
Very cool.
And then the light bulbs. This is our waste in hand here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've seen some of these.
I just think they're just amazing. I love them. So we put all this stuff on the website for you guys to enjoy and to also stimulate you.
Well, go ahead and put my Solartopia logo up there, and people
send it to me.
Solartopia.
Yeah, you have to email it to me.
All right, and I wanted to finish with the 8 steps of Solartopia, which is posted at solartopia.org, because the 8 green steps of Solartopia will tell us how to get to a green powered Earth, basically.
Sounds good.
And I set it up essentially to mimic the 4 noble truths and 8 steps to Buddhist enlightenment, because I like Buddhism. Buddhism is kind of interesting and fun. I think it's there are 350 million Buddhists.
That's a lot.
It's the fourth largest faith tradition behind Christianity, Islam, and Hinduism. And so banning waste and war, maximizing efficiency and conservation, transcending fossil nuke. We have to get totally rid of nuclear power and of fossil fuels. Then we have to convert to renewables, the solartopian technologies of solar, wind, tidal, geothermal, ocean thermal, wave energy, current energy, sustainable biofuels, all those things. They work and they need to be brought in. We also need to go organic in our farming. All pesticides, herbicides, and chemical fertilizers need to be done away with. And I don't raise it in this article, but we really have to question the consumption of meat, especially concentrated animal feeding operations, which are catastrophic ecologically.
You want to say more about that?
Food. Well, the principal food crop in the United States is cholesterol. The millions of acres of land that goes to corn, oats, soy, all that stuff goes to fattened beef animals.
It's actually 16 times, if you didn't know.
Right, 16 times as much vegetable protein goes to produce 1 pound
of,
16 pounds of vegetable protein goes to 1 pound of beef protein, and it's a devastating to our global environment. And I stopped eating meat in 1970. Now, I don't tell people to stop eating meat, but I do say that, it does have a huge environmental cost. The only real meat that you can talk about that might not have much environmental cost with buffalo, if it's done right.
Why is that?
Well, because you don't raise them if they're free-ranging buffalo. They're well-adapted.
Is there any place to free-range anymore?
Well, yeah, actually, Ted Turner owns a huge amount of land. Ted Turner is the biggest landowner in the country. And he raises buffalo, and I think they're free range. You can't really raise buffalo in concentrated animal feeding operations.
Why is that?
Buffalo, because they're just not suited for it.
Well, I know they have a big buffalo population on Catalina Island. They were raising them. They were
wandering
in Catalina, when I used to go over there as a kid.
Yeah, and also on the Big Island of Hawaii, but. As long as they're free-range people, I think will. And the buffalo meat is much healthier than traditional cattle.
Yeah, it's leaner, isn't it?
But we have to get rid of these feedlots with the hogs, the chickens, the cows.
Where they stuff the food down them and put a lot of hormones in them?
And they stand them in their own manure, and then the manure goes into these ponds, and the ponds break and destroy the water. I mean, they're devastatingly bad. And, they cause biblical infestations of insects.
What is that guy? I'm trying to think of his name. Robbins. Tim Robbins? No, from
Yeah.
You know who I'm talking about? Diet for a New America?
Yeah, from Robbins.
Ice cream.
And, he's done that. And also, there's a few people out there. There's a guy whose face I can see, and I can't think of his name, in that movie, Food, Inc. So we have to transform our agriculture. That's part of getting to Solartopia. We need to go organic. We need to stop fattening our animals. If people are going to eat meat, it should be, it should be far free range pigs, cows, chickens. Those are animals.
But the corporations wouldn't like that, would they?
Well, no. Well, we're coming to that. Next is to transform the corporation, the biggest destroyer of the earth. And the most powerful institution in the history of the human race is the corporation. Corporations have human rights and they don't have human responsibilities. And that has to change.
Do you know anything about sovereignty? the UCC Redemption?
That I don't know.
You definitely should listen to the October 7th show. It's a real mind-boggler, okay?
Oh, your show, okay.
Yeah, October 7th, Tim Turner. He will be a very big person. The New Republic is actually forming. It actually started last Thursday. People are reclaiming sovereignty. Back in 1871, it took place 1868 to 71, the United States became run by a corporation.
Right.
And we became corporate members. And as such, we then allowed ourselves to be penalized and taxable. In 1965, I think it was, maritime law was actually incorporated into our system. And maritime law actually supersedes corporate civil law. And that's what this is all about. And we're learning. Gail hasn't started yet, but Debbie, who is on the show once a month with me, we've actually become secure party creditors, and we're actually learning how to use maritime law on our own behalf.
Well, that's interesting.
Do you own a mortgage on your house?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you signed up for your mortgage, it just stuns me even to say this to you. When you signed up for your mortgage was the whatever bank it was, took the money. I'd like to be the first to tell you that your birth certificate, if you're outside of the corporate system, is worth over $300 million.
Why is that?
Why is that? I'm not the expert in this, but I'm going to give the best I can. Back in the 1930s, a lot of land was sold, and if you were a sovereign, your portion of this land that was sold would have been something like $600,000, something of that nature, as every citizen of the United States. But they never mentioned this to us, that our birth certificates were worth something. And over the years and through leverage and all the different things that the banks do, your birth certificate has actually been gaining in value. And if you become a secure party creditor, you actually have access to getting funds from your birth certificate. Anyway, to make a long story short, and it's listen to the October 7th show, and we're actually going to be doing Maritime Law with Ted Turner on the first Wednesday of each month. When you listen to that show, you're going to be really shocked, Harvey. You have no idea what's going on. The bank,
all right,
actually, when you signed your mortgage papers, the banks took the money off your birth certificate. So your mortgage was paid off instantly. Then after they got done with that, they started replicating your mortgage, and they started selling it and they call it derivatives, and they bundled a bunch of these, and they sell them. And I don't quite understand how this turns into money, because it doesn't make sense to me, but according to the banks, it becomes collateral for their institutions, and they start selling these derivatives, and they may sell that loan that you signed up to 30 or 40 times. So your mortgage actually was paid off with your money.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so
good. I'm glad to hear it.
So are your credit cards.
Stop making my payments.
Well, what's interesting, you can't do that unless you know how to do that.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you can stop making your payments and get in a lot of trouble. But this is the case of the emperor has no clothes and nobody's talking about it.
Uh-huh.
And so the secure party creditors have been going on for about 20 years, and frankly, it was a bit too radical and ungrounded when I first heard about it. I was intrigued. But really radical and ungrounded. Over the years, there have been some real masters that have shown up, Tim Turner being one of them. And he's actually created paperwork that's allowing people to go to court and challenge these things. I don't know if you know this or not, but FICO scores are actually illegal. The reason being, they don't have your wet signature. Most of the credit cards that you are in, I don't know, did you get any of them off the Internet?
No.
Well, I got a few off the Internet, okay? So I didn't have their signature. They didn't have mine. That actually invalidates that contract, that there's no wet signature.
Uh-huh.
There's just a lot of really good stuff. You should check out UCC Redemption.
Okay.
I don't want to be teaching something that I'm not as amazing in as Tim is, but I do want to be intriguing the heck out of you because this sounds right up your alley.
Sure.
When you come, and by the way, I've got one of the nastiest letters you could ever receive from Nordstrom's, because one of my friends who's a UCC redemption person actually sent in a bond for $100,000 to pay off my Nordstrom's bill, which was $8,000. Nordstrom's is saying that we counterfeited money. They're accusing us of want to send the FBI after us and all kinds of stuff. The reason being, they don't want us to know what they're doing. And by the way, Nordstrom is one of the better banks. You know, they treat people more humanely. But I was just talking about it with a friend of mine this morning. You know, we got suckered in with these zero credit card things. A couple of years back, you know how easy it was to get a credit card at 0%? I had $400,000 worth of those cards. I was working with a lot of businesses. I was a millionaire, blah, 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 blah. Then I missed a payment. My interest rate went from 0 to 33% on one card.
Wow.
Try catching up. And then the credit card companies work with each other. So if you miss payments on your, say, Bank of America card or something like that, you could get your American Express dropped, your credit limits dropped. A friend of mine just this morning got her credit line dropped $25,000, and she's never been late on the payment. And I said, huh, having trouble with one of your other cards? And she said, yeah. He said, good luck. If you want to, you know, if you want to do something with those credit lines, I'd move fast because they'll drop them. I don't know if you know this or not, but the credit quota used to be that if you had a credit card for, say, $10,000, it was wise to only use 40% of the card. Did you know that formula?
No.
Okay, so that was the formula of having good credit. And what they do is, so let's say you've got $4,000 on your $10,000 card. You turn around and they've dropped your credit limit from $10,000 to $4,500. You're now at 99% of your credit limit. You've now just dropped your credit score and you didn't even do it. And you may have made all your payments on time. And that's part of what's happening. And then because your credit score is now this high percentage, they get to charge you more interest because you're now a risk. So it's really fun. I'm having a very good time, and I'm learning how to write all of these things. And, you know, if you want to check it out, go to AmericaCanBeFree.com and just click on that little seminar site, and you will find out where Tim Turner is giving a seminar, and he's doing it all over the country. He's actually doing a couple in California here. Now, Ohio is pretty depressed as a state, isn't it?
Yeah, we have a high unemployment, but, you know, so yeah.
So the people in Ohio are really, really, really suffering because they probably got these high interest rates, and a friend of mine lives in a nice little Ohio town, and it's practically impossible to find a job for over minimum wage.
Yeah, they're hard to get.
So I don't know how that's affecting you, but you seem to be living in a different realm. I don't know how your personal...
Well, I teach at two colleges, but the pay is very low. I'm not a full-time faculty. Didn't want to be, really. I enjoy teaching, but so I'm an adjunct, and the adjunct pay is very, very low, but they do pay. But in order to get even close to the poverty line, I have to teach, like, a full load.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's basically a poverty level.
Did you see Capitalism, a Love Story?
No, I have not seen it.
It's fun. I mean, the guy is wonderfully twisted as far as I'm concerned. But one of the really things on there, do you remember when the airline crash happened with the two pilots that had both been working a couple of jobs?
Yeah, right. We saw that.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're being forced to, and they were saying that crash happened because I think one of them actually had three jobs. Two or three jobs.
Right.
And by the way, I don't know if you know this, but part of the reason for that is that they had cut their pay by 40%.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So,
right. You know. So in terms of getting out of this mess, your information is very interesting. We do have to transform the corporation and make it accountable to human beings. So in Solartopia, corporations may exist, but they do not have human rights. And they do have human responsibilities. Their corporations, as part of their charters in Solartopia, must be accountable to the environment and to the people who work in them and to the society as a whole. So corporations can't run rampant over the needs of human and ecological society. And of course, this will take away the rights that they were given under the 14th Amendment and their definition.
So stop right there, because not everybody knows what the 14th Amendment is.
Well, the 14th Amendment was granted after the Civil War, and basically it was designed to protect the people of the South, the black people of the South. And in the 1880s, the corporate lawyers went in front of the Supreme Court and said that corporations are persons, therefore they're entitled to protection under the 14th Amendment. So that's why corporations can run rampant and why they're so powerful.
And that's and why that's, we're subjected to them, and that's why we become sovereigns. I'm no, you know, I don't have to vote anymore. I'm actually surrendered my right to vote.
Uh-huh.
As part
well, that's
of,
actually the next part of the steps to Solartopia, is you know, we have to have a social democracy. We have to have a situation where people are guaranteed the basic food, clothing, housing, shelter, education, and medicine. And we can't have a so-called political democracy where people are allegedly given the right to vote, even though we know votes are stolen, especially with electronic voting machines.
Well, even in the last election, you know, in the last election, they actually affected the vote by 2-3%.
Well, especially on the ballot initiatives in California on gay marriage, and we'll have to watch out what happens. I assume there's going to be a ballot initiative on marijuana and hemp, and of course those are fully legal in Solartopia. But with a social democracy and a political democracy that's real, we have to have paper ballots that are counted. Universal paper ballots that are hand-counted, and automatic voter registration, so that when you turn 18, you're automatically registered to vote. You don't have to go out and have these voter registration drives and things like that. All citizens do have the right to vote and do not have to, in Solartopia, go out and get in registered. And then the final step to Solartopia is the empowerment of women. When I wrote the book Solartopia, Our Green Powered Earth, originally,
what year was that?
I was asked, how am I going to deal with the population question? And the way you deal with the population question is you empower women. Women are the ones who make the decision about how many children will be born on this earth. They're in touch with Mother Earth. And the demographic studies show that whenever women have education, equal employment, equal pay, and access to birth control and reproductive control, reproductive freedom, then populations drop. If you look at Italy, Spain, and Quebec, all of which, by the way, are predominantly Catholic, but as women have become empowered and become more prosperous, population levels off and starts to go down.
So has Susan been whispering in your ear, Harvey?
What's that?
I said, has Susan been whispering in your ear?
Well, you know, I won't comment on that, but the fact is that, you know, my line is that I was in the anti-nuclear, I've been in the anti-nuclear movement for 45 years, and then I suddenly realized I'm married to a fast breeder, so.
and enjoying every minute of it, I
absolutely.
Think.
Absolutely. So the bottom line is that, women really, need to be in charge of how many children will be born. And so it's not, the question is not whether abortions can be legal. The question is, do we have access to sex education and to birth control, and you know, it's amazing to me that people can go out and scream and yell about abortion being allegedly killing babies and all that stuff, and then turn around and oppose contraception
or try to send troops to Afghanistan, for God's sake.
It's astonishing. Yeah, and supporting the war. So those are the eight steps to Solartopia, essentially: banning waste and war, maximizing efficiency and conservation, including reviving the mass transit system, banning all fossil fuels and nuclear power, installing a complete renewable-based energy system, going organic with our agriculture, and banning concentrated animal feed operations, transforming the corporations so that corporations do not have human rights and are accountable to the public, assuring social democracy so that everyone has the basics of life and also has a hand-counted paper ballot, which is an universal voter registration, and finally empowering women so that the and of course making allowing women equal pay equal employment opportunity, while at the same time making sex education and contraception universal. Those are the eight steps to Solartopia, and I think if we follow them, we can actually have a planet that is sustainable and that will be very much worth living on.
I like it. I like it. You know, I was also thinking of Larry Hagman. You know, he has the largest solar home in America.
Larry Hagman, you mean J.R.?
I mean J.R. I mean, what is it, Colonel Nelson?
Mary Martin's son.
Mary Martin's son, right.
It's very cool that we have with us the son of Peter Pan, and that Peter Pan was actually a woman.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what else I like. When I was a kid, I saw I saw Peter Pan 14 times.
The movie or the play?
I saw the play twice,
uh-huh.
And I saw the videos. They used to run videos of Peter Pan.
Of the play, yeah, I saw that.
I saw the movie once, but I saw the videos. So a total of 14 times. But when I was at the Philharmonic, Los Angeles Philharmonic, is where I first saw it when I was, I believe, 14, which had been 1954, I saw Larry Hagman's picture in the program because he had been in the chorus line of South Pacific. And I remember looking at his picture and thinking that someday I would know him. And I do. He's a friend now. And he shows up a couple times a year on Waking Up in America with all of his different interests. I don't know if you know this or not, but he knows how to recycle. He actually, he actually got a liver transplant. And he now works for the Special Olympics when it comes to transplants. And he travels all over for that. So JR is quite a guy. And he has the largest solar house in the United States, and he actually sells electricity back to the electric company. His electric bill, Harvey, went from over $3,000 a month to $13 by doing that. So
wow,
I know, I'm impressed. I need to actually got so wrapped up in what we were doing here that I now need to plug in a couple of our advertisers and let us know how much we appreciate them sponsoring Waking Up in America. Stardust at 828-665-0411. That's 828-665-0411 is known for amazing mailings to about 100,000 very high quality people. So if you call that 828-665-0411 and tell them that Val sent you, you're going to be astounded at how reasonably priced these mailings are. And I just sent out another one this month and got great response. So I do that periodically, and it's always been profitable. Roberto's Bungalows in San Pancho, Mexico, which is 45 minutes north of Puerto Vallarta. Oh my God, I love Steve and Diana. Sometimes I just say, enough, I can't do any more of this country right now, I need a break. And I go down to San Pancho and walk on the beach, and you can have a margarita if you want one. The people are friendly, a lot of English is spoken there. It's a charming town, it makes you feel like you felt in the 50s or 60s when you walked into a place and it just all felt safe and friendly, which is harder to find here. Call Steve and Diana at 971-239-4120. And if you want to know about emotional clearing or Monavi or any other good things like that, call 310-455-8623, and I would be happy to fill you in. We've been on the air with Harvey Wasserman of Solartopia and his brilliant article on Barack Obama. And how would they get on your mailing list, Harvey?
Just write me at windhw@aol.com.
Yeah, do that.
windhw@aol.com. Drop me a note, and I'll put you on my list.
I've heard
Solartopia.org and freepress.org.
There you go. I have to tell you, just before we close here, I've heard the horrible figures on like 60 Minutes, which has 10 million listeners.
Mm-hmm.
They ran a really good program. They got 7 responses with 10 million listeners. So I want you guys out there to show Harvey that we can do better than 60 Minutes, okay? This program has been brought to you by the Golden Hearts Foundation in association with Kirkgaard Media, our radio partners, ConingCompany.com, Monavi, MaxGXL, Dr. James Murphy in Memoriam. Thank you to the team at Voice America, to Bent Migan for our theme music, Almost Ordinary People. Next week, invite a friend to listen, and remember, be alive and awake, and sitius altius fortius. And thank you, Harvey, and thank you, Gail. And if you'd stick around for a minute, Harvey, I'd sure appreciate it.
Okay.
Love and dreams, and the time you spoke them.
Thank you for joining us today for Waking Up in America with Valerie Kirkgaard. Waking Up in America can be heard live every Wednesday, 12 p.m. Pacific Time on VoiceAmerica.com, and Valerie welcomes all emails at heavenincorporated.com.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio.